This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. Hey, React nerds. This week is ReactConf, and I suspect the suspense and concurrent mode will have a great showing. So, in anticipation and excitement, I asked friend of the show, Swix, to join me for Suspense Concurrent Mode Rundown episode, talking about everything that we know so far and what we hope to see at this year's event. Now, we don't have any privileged information. We're just two nerds who like to keep abreast of React's most exciting future feature. This week is made possible by Infinite Red and G2i. Infinite Red builds beautiful, functional apps in React Native, and they want to help you bring your ideas to life. Use their expertise in design, mobile, React Native, Ruby on Rails, Node, Phoenix, and Elixir to get your app on track. For a limited time, React Podcast listeners get two tickets to Infinite Red's Chain React Conf when they start a new project. Chain React is North America's only React Native conference, and attendees are saying it's the friendliest, most educational conference they've ever been to. At the conference, you'll get to meet the team and see why they're the React Native industry experts to take your app the distance. To start a project, go to our very special URL, reactpodcast.infinite.red, and get two tickets to Chain React Conf 2020. Build a beautiful, functional React Native app with Infinite Red. Now, for me, the worst part of contracting, by far, was shoring up and maintaining business. I never wanted to interrupt a good coding vendor to take a sales call and send off invoices. I just wanted to do the work getting critical features into customers' hands. G2i makes that possible. They market you and your skills directly to companies. They manage all logistics, contracts, invoicing, and payments. You get personal support from their incredible team, so no previous contracting experience is required. And best of all, you join a unique collective of incredible React and React Native developers, available in Slack to help you through those really tricky moments. So growing your skills is integrated into a day's work. If you're a contractor, don't go it alone. Partner with the amazing people at G2i. Go to g2i.co today, apply, and find opportunities you'll love. G2i. We vet, you get hired. It's that simple. Swix, welcome back to React Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
I'm excited to have you back. I think over the last like year and a half, maybe, we've developed kind of like a conversation around concurrent mode and suspense. I think we were both kind of like into it, like into the notion of it when we saw it, and we've just been like super excited about it. And we kind of talked on YouTube once about it and all this stuff. And like every time we get together, we kind of like crazy rich Asians, crazy React Asians, crazy React Asians is kind of like our mantra. And we've just been talking about the suspense thing for like a little bit over a year. Mm-hmm. And I thought going into ReactConf 2019, it's next week. It'll probably be like the day of or like the day after we air this. It's going to be pretty heavy, I assume, on a lot of like concurrent mode stuff. So I thought it'd be fun to just kind of get you on and talk about like what you're excited about, what you think might get released, kind of some of the changes that we've seen over the last year in concurrent mode, and all that stuff. So, so first of all, where are you? What you've been up to this this week?
Wow, that question is very loaded for me. I'm in a random co-working space in San Francisco, in the Tenderloin, which is always a fun place to be in San Francisco. I have been doing a bunch of conferences. It's conference season this week, this entire month, basically. So just been doing a bunch of talks around the Jamstack, around Star Apps, which are these bunch of investment theses around the front end ecosystem. Doing a bunch of conferences in public speaking. Netlify ourselves, we had a conference this week, and we launched a bunch of new things. And it was just a really good time to see the company because I live out of New York. So it's not so often that I come to San Francisco and see my coworkers.
Yeah, that's awesome. How was Jamstack Conf?
Yeah, it was really good. Like surprisingly good. Like we actually had this new thing where we asked people like if they were going to launch things to launch them in like lightning launches. So we actually had several different launches scheduled. Quite a few of them were like CMSE, like WYSIWYG type things. And it seems like people are very interested in the no code space. Like in this week alone, there have been multiple VC investments in headless CMSs.
Wow.
Which are CMSs which are decoupled from the front end. So you can write your React front end with Gatsby or whatever other static site generators. Or you don't have to use React. But the idea is that you edit your content in a headless way. And that's a pretty interesting thing. Like I didn't anticipate so much VC money going in. It was like a $30 million Series A, like a $4 million thing for Sanity.io. Like, and just like a bunch of other companies are getting funded in this space. So it's pretty exciting.
Nice. Well, I know I've been familiar with a product I think called Forestry. I think they've been in this space for a while, and it actually like it's a front end. But then it actually makes Git commits for you. Is that right?
Yep, totally.
Which is just so cool.
And so Forestry was one of the teams that launched something this conference called Tina. I haven't played around with it. It seems like it's like a visual editor for with React components. That's as much as I know right now.
That's awesome. That's got to be super fun. I know that you're at a... Was working in Netlify, I mean, you're like at the center of like a very cool thing that's happening right now. And so seeing all this work happen in this space is awesome. It must be fun to actually be at that conference.
Yeah. And as part of my job, I'm sort of encouraged to keep on top of React stuff. And that's why, I get to squeeze in a little bit of React community work, keeping up on React news as part of my job, just to keep refresh and do talks on it.
Yeah. Well, hey, real quick. I mean, we could do a whole episode on this, but you mentioned Star, and I saw a bunch of tweets about it. Oh. Could you just give us like the elevator pitch on that, and then that'll just be like a little teaser for the next time we get together?
Oh, sure. I think it was just like a mental framework for like what people are investing in. Like, it seems like as the backend becomes more and more commoditized, and everything moves towards platform as a service, serverless being much easier and easier, the engineering efforts are moving towards the front end where the more the business value is created by working on things that working in products more than platforms. The things that people are investing in, like when you hear about the New York Times moving to React and GraphQL, when you hear about Airbnb moving to TypeScript, when you hear about everybody on Earth open sourcing their design system, what is the common trends and why are people making the architectural changes that they make? And what are the trade-offs to those things? So I kind of group them into design systems, static typing, smarter APIs, and static or client-side rendering. And so those are exemplified by four technologies. They're not specific to four technologies, but they're exemplified by Storybook, TypeScript, Apollo GraphQL, and React. Star is more of a silly acronym that I was just like noticing that these things came up again and again and again. So I wrote an article for on CSS Tricks. Chris Coyer like gave me a lot of confidence by like also fleshing out the thesis with his talk at Jamstack Conference.
Awesome.
So I highly recommend checking that out.
Yeah, we'll have to. Hopefully, they'll come out and we can link them and whatnot.
Yeah, you should have Chris Coyer on the pod. Actually, I think he's. I mean, obviously, he's very deep on front end, but CodePen itself is also going through this evolution, and I think it's a pretty interesting thing to talk about.
Nice. Yeah, I'd love to. He's definitely on the list. I feel like I kind of need to make this like if I could handle it, I would make it like a twice weekly show because there's so many cool people doing so much cool stuff.
For sure.
So into the meat of what we want to talk about today is suspense and concurrent mode and React cache and all of these things that kind of like tie into one another. There's like a big bucket of stuff that's kind of been on the horizon a little bit. So maybe we should just start at like first principles, right? Like, so what is suspense, or I guess concurrent mode? Like, we have some of it already, but like, what are we not seeing? What are some of the things that we've seen? But, you know, there's just a bunch of questions. So where do you want to start?
I think I should hear from you, because you just taught a workshop on this. So this is more of a discussion rather than, like, neither of us are experts. Neither of us are in the core team.
Definitely not.
We don't represent them. So we just kind of followed it more closely than some. And so we're just kind of piecing together the pieces. So I'll fill in from the historical perspective, and then maybe you can talk about where we are at right now. So essentially, suspense was announced March of last year at JSConf Iceland. And it's October 2019, so it's a year and a bit since it was announced. So they're definitely keeping us in suspense. I don't know if that was the intention, but that was the
effect. They named it appropriately, if that was
exactly. It works if you're blocked by a 7-person core team. So it was initially called Async React. And the idea was that everything used to be synchronously rendered. That meant that you not only were blocked when you were doing expensive work, you would also have to manually implement loading spinners and common UI patterns just to unblock your synchronous work, or to chunk up your synchronous work. And so they wanted to make that a first class sort of API inside of React, and to make a lot of that imperative code, which uses state, which uses life cycles, and just make that declarative by just wrapping things in a thing, in a wrapper called suspense. It doesn't have any corresponding element on the DOM, but it's an instruction to React that, hey, like, this is a boundary at which you can suspend everything inside it for data fetching. And you can show a fallback. It has a priority at which that fallback shows. And I think that's a very key part of it, because there are a lot of people who try to replicate the API of suspense, which is essentially a read from a cache. And you can absolutely do that without React Fiber. You can do that in user land. But what you can't do is do the temporary, like, timeout, one of the key features of suspense is that it actually waits for a bit before it shows the spinner. And if your async fetching resolves before that thing, before that timeout, then it doesn't show a spinner at all. So that involves some pretty complex coordination logic, which obviously you could do yourself, but React is sort of building it in for you. Does that help? Would you make any changes to that? That's my sort of summary of the high level.
No. Yeah, I think that's great, and I think that really well summarizes all of the things that we saw in that March event from Dan, and kind of the high level, like, I guess goals for this. Now, like, I guess one thing to clarify is, like, this was like pre-hooks. This was, you talked about, like, the name change to concurrent mode. It was kind of the first thing that we saw with utilizing the Fiber architecture. And if I'm not mistaken, this was pre, like, scheduler too. Like, we hadn't seen anything about, like, scheduler at that point.
Right. I think the scheduler was almost immediately split out, because they realized that there was an opportunity to collaborate with other frameworks to do that. When it was introduced, suspense was introduced together with time slicing, which is a confusing, like, it's a feature, but not a API. But it also kind of is an API. It just, like, is called a different name. So that bit is a little bit confusing. But I think where it's resolved to, so it used to be called Async React, and now it's called Concurrent React, because they felt that better conveys the idea that there's a work in process thread, and then there's a currently committed thread. The whole idea is that if you opt in to a concurrent route, then everything inside of that route would be time sliced for you. So React Fiber is doing the time slicing for you. I also want to make a mention that the first we've been seeing benefits from React Fiber Rewrite ever since React 16.0 with fragments, with like array return values.
Yes.
So we've been seeing, you know, small things, but this is definitely the bigger one of the bigger implications of React Fiber.
Yeah. So if I understand correctly, like right now as it stands, when you render a React app, it kind of, you know, in like, you know, I guess what could be called like sync mode now.
Yeah.
Like you, is that what we're calling it? Like, you know, now that there's another thing, is there a name for the thing that's always been, or how does that work?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there is a name. It's just what was, you know, what we have before.
What was before.
because right now what we do is React DOM.render, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a synchronous route. And actually what it will change to is a React DOM create root API.
And the difference is that if I understand correctly, right now we render basically the whole thing, like gets rendered into the, like, you know, virtual DOM or whatever. And then that gets diffed into the actual DOM, right? But like in concurrent React, now there's ways to like kind of like update just single parts of it. Is that the big difference?
I wouldn't use those exact words.
Yeah, no. I am very not knowledgeable in this space. So yeah.
So the just sort of definitive resource for understanding Fiber is Andrew Clark's repo. We can definitely link that up in the show notes, as well as Lynn Clark's. It feels like you need to have the last name of Clark to get this, but Lynn Clark's talk at React Conf, I think 3 years ago.
Okay.
And so I think the idea is that the stack reconciler used to have everything on one stack, and there was no other way around it. And Fiber made every component into a data structure, which is a linked list, which you can traverse pretty freely. But then also every Fiber has a work in process version and a currently committed version, and you just sort of double buffer and commit back and forth between them. And so the idea is that you can still stay interactive on the currently rendered Fiber while React is still working on the work in process Fiber that has not been rendered yet. Because reconciliation is expensive, this is the kind of thing that Rich Harris calls amortizing the cost of rendering. Like, because you know, you're doing all that work in diffing the virtual DOM, let's just put that in the work in process thread. Let's let us be able to start and resume that every 16 milliseconds. And meanwhile, everything that we're currently rendering on screen stays interactive all the way through. So if you remember that lag radar that was on the JS Conf Iceland video, that is possible because everything that is being done in the background is on the work in process Fiber. So we don't actually have to commit that. We can just start and stop that. So that's something that the stack reconciler was not able to do because it was just done all in one swoop.
Interesting. Okay, so we have React DOM.render, which is the way we have it now, and the way React apps have worked up to this point. Even though we have the like re-architecture of Fiber, like it's still kind of like all operating in this like, you know, synchronous mode in terms of like rendering. But kind of our opening into concurrent mode is this new like create root API. Unstable right now, so marked unstable, but eventually maybe a create root API, which renders things differently. Now, I know that has an effect on the way children are rendered. Is that right? Or the way that they're rendered kind of, I guess, together or separately?
Yep. So it does change the defaults to render siblings together. In fact, I gave one of my earliest talks on this. I gave talking about React's new defaults, and that this is a little bit of a paradigm shift in the sense that so even if one of the children is going to need data to be loaded, all you got to do is suspend within that child, and the sibling of that child will also suspend together with it, even though it doesn't have that data requirement, or you don't have to like manually sort of coordinate that by lifting state up and then doing like, you know, if it's updated, then render it both of these.
Gotcha.
So React just naturally coordinates the way that children suspend and show together. And obviously, I think you're building up to this, that there is an API to control even the reveal order of these children. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I guess let's go just a little bit into the future. So we had that March event, and then ReactConf last year, they talked a little bit more about what they were working on with Suspense. And at that point, let's see, so this was a year ago now at ReactConf 2018 in, you know, October, I guess it was, where they released a Suspense component, which we've been able to use all year to lazy load components. It has the fallback as we'd seen, but it didn't have what we'd seen before, which was like max duration. And even prior to that, was it delay MS or for milliseconds or something like that?
Yeah.
Where the Suspense component actually controlled the amount of delay before it would present the fallback.
Right.
And so those were a couple of the, I think that was that and maybe React Cache and Create Resource. So those were kind of like the introductions at the point of ReactConf 2018 last year. Is that about where we were at?
That's where we were at.
Okay.
And I think the idea, and again, this is why we could show the Suspense API without finalizing everything else. Was that if you don't have a duration or a max duration, everything just falls back to a max duration of nothing. Or
oh, sure,
because you're not in a concurrent route, and so it only starts to matter when you're in a concurrent route what the duration is, because then you actually have that double buffering scenario going on. I think one of the issues that the React team has been struggling with is communicating what duration really means. Hmm. And the idea is that there's this complex formula. It's not that complex, but you need to have it in your head that when you say Suspense max duration of something, you're not really controlling, you don't really have that much control over what the actual duration is. React still decides for you. And you're just all you're doing is just lowering the tolerance level from whatever the default is, and it seems like there's multiple levels of duration now. I don't even know. I've just like stopped keeping track of what the levels of priority are. But they really want you to think in terms instead, like stop thinking in terms of hard like numbers in terms of duration, and just think in terms of priority levels, and then let React decide for you.
Interesting.
So it's a little bit more of a reach in terms of like, I always think of these in like, it's like, in the evergreen question of is React a framework? React is becoming a little bit more of a framework in a sense that you're inverting control, you're giving React control over when exactly things render, because React, you shouldn't have that fine grain of control. Otherwise, React, I don't know how to put this. Like React needs to understand when it's rendering, and so it can control what it's rendering.
Well, I think that's and I'll put this in terms of people who've been listening to React podcasts for the past couple of months would understand, is that we had an episode with Paul Henschel talking about Use Spring, and he was talking about how in CSS, you animate things by transitions, and you give things like a duration effectively. And he says, but that's not really how things animate in the real world. Like it's much more complex than that. And it's about the relationships of like this thing to the other, and like what harmony feels like inside of an environment. And it's less like, get from here to there in 300 milliseconds. And I think that's a little bit kind of what we're like a transition that we're seeing. Like, so we've seen this like delay in milliseconds and max duration, and it's kind of hard because that's not really the intent that like we're after. Like in React, the intent is like, hey, like all of these things are being coordinated. Like, what is your intent? Like, how do you want people to see all of this all together? Like, do you want to have control over a little bit of control over when they see a spinner, because like, maybe it takes 100 milliseconds and it's just a flash, when, seeing a white page for 100 milliseconds until you saw actual content would have been, a better user experience. And thinking about those things from a much higher level in terms of like coordination and experience versus like, hey, wait for 250 milliseconds until this thing, until you show a spinner.
Yeah, totally.
Does that seem kind of like accurate?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I've noticed that in like a recent build, actually, like, so when I was using a Suspense component, just recently, that they have actually taken max duration off of Suspense And so that's like no longer an API that we even have. So what are some of the things that are kind of like coming in to maybe fill that gap that we might not know about now?
It sounds like you're talking about the two new hooks that are being introduced. And this is like as soon as this week. So obviously the Facebook.com rewrite was done over the past year or so. And they've been using hooks in production at scale, hooks and suspense in production at Facebook. So what essentially is they're doing is they had a private closed source implementation and usage of this, and they're testing it out. And now they're sort of copying it over and open sourcing it. So it seems like the key thing that they're trying to do is based on this use transition hook. And it's actually pretty analogous to the loading flag that Dan actually used in the JSConf demo. But now it's a hook, so it's available anywhere within your app. And you can tap into the React runtime and actually see if like, if something is loading, then you actually show a spinner. But the whole thing about like not showing a spinner if you don't need it. So it's kind of funny because Dan was kind of reflecting on this and saying that they didn't even have hooks in mind when they started talking about suspense and concurrent mode. But it's as they sort of proceeded and explored the space, they found that hooks were a great API for this, and now they can't imagine not having it when using suspense. So it seems like it's a necessary part. I just love the way that Dan explained it at ReactCon last year when he introduced hooks. It really does seem like hooks were there all along. We just like were kind of going in to like split the atom and like discovering the individual subatomic parts of like, ha, this is a state and we need to like expose that as a hook. And then this is an effect and we need to expose that as a hook. And all these like individual parts and now we split them up, we can tap into the runtime in a very flexible way. So this is a new part of the component's responsibility, its role in the suspense tree. The way to tap into that is through one of these hooks, use transition or deferred value.
Interesting. So these would so a lot of our hooks that we've seen so far are like globally useful. I wasn't able to gather this in my reading, but is use transition effectively only going to be useful in a concurrently rendered app?
It seems like it.
Yeah. It seems like it to me too, but I wasn't totally sure.
I'm also not sure about the name, by the way, because a lot of people read it and assume it's for animation, and it's not.
Yes.
So that's ipso facto an indication of a bad name. So.
Yeah, I think that the error, at least as I read it in, I think the release of 16.10, if you put max duration on a suspense component, it said read the docs for use suspense transition. So maybe there's some kind of like ongoing discussion about what that API will eventually be.
Yeah. So like in the PR, Sebastian actually said like, this is only useful within a suspense anyway. So he just dropped the suspense word from that hook name, but now it just reads wrong. naming things is hard. I'm sure they'll figure it out.
It is.
It's pretty funny. Like there was this, I actually recommend people interested in like naming things. Sophie Alpert actually talked a little bit about they had like 100 candidate names for hooks, and like everything like fix-ins was like the other popular one, which I like a lot. Like mix-in, fix-ins.
That's still my favorite fix-ins.
Yeah. There's a strong argument for that. But they wanted the React team prioritizes short names for APIs that you're going to use often. Mm-hmm. And despite hooks possibly being confusing with other usages of the word hooks, they preferred that because that's just like something that we're going to use again and again. So you obviously want something intuitively and short, easy to remember. And this is a very interesting shift compared to the way they named lifecycle methods, which were like, let's make it as long as possible, component will defer unbound, whatever. And in their own code, they prefer long names. But that's an interesting shift in API design when they think about public APIs.
Yeah, I remember in our React podcast episode with the core team last year, Sebastian said that he will always think of them as augmenters.
Terrible.
which I can't. Can you imagine? Like, I feel like maybe they wouldn't have even taken off if they were Ogwin. I'm sure that it is a perfectly accurate name, but I don't even think I know how to spell augmenters.
Yeah, it's kind of like me whenever I like look at, there's some like transducers in Redux land, and my brain just turns off. On one hand, naming doesn't matter because it just compiles down the code. But on the other hand, name does matter because we read code more than we write code.
Yeah.
And code is actually for humans to read as well.
Yeah. And it's like how we talk about it, how we have conversations about it, and how easy those things are to say really does matter for those conversations.
Yeah.
So we have these two new hooks, and it looks like use transition or use suspense transition or whatever it ends up being is going to be maybe the way that we manage those transitions of suspense elements, kind of replacing what we'd seen before in the theoretical, like max duration and delay milliseconds that kind of preceded it. And you bring up an interesting point, and I think you'd mentioned before we started, like there was a conversation or a Twitter conversation that Dan started about how, like, why they've taken this course of kind of announcing suspense or concurrent mode or async mode so long ago, but then kind of like not having like publicly available ways of using it, is that there's all these things that like came out of it. And you talked about like kind of like breaking down the atom, breaking down the component into like hooks. And like all of these things have kind of like come out of this vision for the future, that in support of that vision and like are kind of informing the future of that API. But it's really like a slow process figuring that out.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a ton of R&D, and it's really amazing I'm sure there's a lot that we just don't see, but it's a really amazing how you know, it's a very sensitive process of like if you talk about things too early, you might kill it because you might get a lot of negative feedback on immature ideas that just need some time to try out. And so I think one of the reasons why they opted for this, because there's this debate, it's affecting Vue as well and some other frameworks where like, when you say open source, how much is open? How much of your roadmap is open? Hooks were not open, and this kind of went against the grain of how React adopted an RFC process, and I think people were sort of assuming by that everything would start as an RFC, and that would be the first instance of any public discussion of anything. And it turns out that that's not the right way to launch some things. And so for React concurrent mode in particular, it seems like what Dan is saying over here is that it requires a lot of buy-in from the ecosystem. Like it seems like there are some things in the React ecosystem that don't really jibe very well, at least in mental model, but maybe in API, with the idea that there's a work in process thread, and then there's a ongoing there'll be multiple accesses to a single source of truth that if it's not in React, then React doesn't know about it, then it might cause tearing of state, and so he in his judgment, which like I frankly don't see everything that he says, so I don't really understand it fully for what he's saying. But in his judgment, announcing it in March of last year gave the ecosystem enough time to actually move significantly enough to where it's concurrent ready.
Gotcha. Yep.
I think a lot of it has to do with hooks, because hooks are much better aligned in terms of mental model. With the idea that this is very functional. Each of these should be idempotent renders with controlled effects that are tracked through a dependency array, and that's a much easier model than a class component with a single instance. Now, to be clear, both of these map to the same thing in terms of fiber, and you can probably use class components in your suspense tree. It's just a better API if you do it through hooks. That's at least the public line. I think there are reasonable questioning of this, and I probably am not stating it as best as I could be. But I think that's the overall thrust of what the argument is, that they wanted to move the ecosystem towards a more concurrent ready mode, in their judgment, it has been a success. And that's why they took this unusual step.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one thing I love about it. I feel like they've done a great job of managing this project and managing that tension of it needing to be something that, you know, supports the use cases of Facebook, obviously. You know, they're the ones that are kind of paying the core team to like actually like keep working on this stuff. But then also it has a huge responsibility to the rest of the ecosystem who's like, you know, built their applications on top of it. And I feel like this path that they've taken where they talk about what their thinking is, reveal their thinking, and then just kind of like slowly and methodically work toward it is great. And I know that I've seen this in really good educators. They're not afraid to let the students be like just one step ahead of them, right? Like they'll tell them something, say something that's like gives them an opportunity to think about what the next steps are. And then those questions like lead to like, you know, like the next lesson. And they're like, oh yeah, great. Like you're thinking and like, this is where we need to be. And like React has always done a great job of letting the community kind of be like maybe one step ahead and like putting those libraries out and exploring the like the space and the tension and then being like, hey, all of these are great ideas. Now we're going to wrap that into, you know, now we're going to wrap that up, package it up as, you know, hooks or, you know, whatever.
In fact, like that's why I'm always in support of early adopters. Like you and I are early adopters. We actually care about this. A lot, most like 90% of React developers don't know what about anything. They're still learning about hooks. They haven't tried hooks yet. When you go to a conference and you ask like if everyone has used hooks or not, to you and me, like obviously we use them on the first day, but a lot of them just like, you know, they have bigger things to do than try new APIs. So
yeah. Those classes make money, man.
Right. But people have to get burned on these new things to figure out the bad patterns before it spreads out to the millions of React developers out there. So I'm always in favor of like, you know, the early adopters trying things out, giving feedback. I think the React community listens to that feedback very well. So
yeah,
I mean that's a nice way to manage the community, I guess. they don't have the broader thesis behind this.
No, I think I think it's true, and I think that, you know, when you're moving so many people, you know, it does take, you know, I always say like it when we're thinking about bigger features at work, I always say like it takes 2 years to do anything, right? And I think that that's the same for like open source stuff, right? Like, you know, they introduced hooks, you know, last year, and I think that we still have another year until, you know, people are like, oh yeah, like I get this, I understand it, it's my first, you know, solution, you know, it's my first plan of attack when I want to like build a thing, you know, where most React developers are actually in that space. So I don't know. I like the slow approach. I think it's good for communities.
One thing I would also mention, I think just to sort of wrap this up in terms of API exploration, is that if you check out the old React Cache API and the way you do like a create resource and then you do like a resource.read, and it's hard to mouth code on a podcast, but I guess that's what you do here. But you're sort of like synchronously reading within your render, right? This cache, and that kicks off an async function, and that suspends, and then it resolves, and then you get back the value, and then you keep writing as though it's synchronous, right? It converts an async thing into a synchronous thing, and a bunch of other APIs do this, but if you think about it, this is actually an asynchronous version of what the same thing you're doing in hooks. So essentially, like React Cache and Suspense are like the async version, whereas of hooks, where hooks are synchronously tapping into the React runtime, and then caches and Suspense are asynchronous tapping into anything outside the React runtime. So if you look at it I'm sure this was not planned. Maybe only Sebastian was like, he was like, you know, as when he was like a 12-year-old baby, he like already figured this out, and now we're just working through it. You know, there's a very nice parallel between the way that we're using hooks right now and the way that we will be using some version of caches or resources, or Apollo queries. They're all sort of like synchronously reading within the render, and it's a very nice way to evolve the ecosystem. I think that slow evolution definitely has prepared us to do a lot more inside of the render. And that, yes. Therefore, everything can just be a function. Every component can just be a function.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, because it feels like, you know, last year, like over the course of the last year, it feels like the story was, you know, anything that you've been able to do inside of a render prop or a higher order component, you can now do inside of a hook. It doesn't mean you have to, but it means that now there's a first class kind of thing for doing that. And it changed the way that we wrote that code. And it feels like now, instead of it seems like now fetching data could just fall in line with like what we've seen with hooks, which it feels like what you're saying, right? Is that now this just feels like the next thing, right? Like, oh, we already know that, you know, how to get data from hooks like asynchronously, but in like a synchronous looking manner. And so now we're going to do that same thing. We're just going to, now these things just get data. And that transition has been so smooth where it could have been very rough.
Yeah, I think it stems from, okay, so there's another document that's like foundational to understanding React that I think I wish everyone would see is I think it's called React Basic, where it's mm-hmm. basically just a gist, but it's in a GitHub repo, and it's just a progressive step through of Sebastian explaining how he views React as a language. Dan Abramov has probably a more accessible version of this in his post. It's called React as a UI Runtime. And it basically okay. just talks about React as a language and the runtime interpreting the language on the fly and doing things with it. And that's why we're able to do things like tapping into hooks and then, you know, calling suspense and calling like fragments and all this wonderful stuff. It really frees up React to do a lot more than execute things in order. And so it's becoming more and more of a runtime interpretation of React the language, which is pretty exciting.
I love it. So there's, and we'll definitely link those. So if you're listening, we're going to have, I'm taking copious notes and we're going to link to all these things.
I come with plenty of homework.
Yeah, and I think that the biggest thing, and I think we'll probably release this a little bit early, is that I want people to feel well prepared for, you know, whatever we end up talking about next at ReactConf.
Yep.
Because I think a lot of times we put these things, you know, kind of out of sight, out of mind. I just have to get my work done, and so I don't want to think about like whatever's on the future. But this stuff is, you know, stuff is really interesting, and it could very, you know, on, you know, month one, solve some problems that you've been beating your head against the wall for a really long time. So that's what all of this is in service to.
Yeah, we have one more point, on the talking points that we prepared. I think a lot of people actually aren't aware that a big part of the motivation for suspense actually comes out of solving streaming server-side rendering for React.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, like, it's because the marketing is very much on developer experience, on writing async fetching API, I think people lose sight of the fact that Facebook or React in general is trying to solve this idea that you have to do a double pass for server-side rendering for React, which can make it slow. And then the idea that you have to render the whole thing before you send it over. The concept of streaming server-side rendering is that you're sending bits of HTML, and that's rendering as it comes in to the browser, which, by the way, is how HTML works. And when we use React, especially when we use React as a client-side rendering solution, we lose all of that, right? We have to pull in the HTML, and then we pull in the JavaScript, and then we render. And that's obviously a very, very long time to interactive, time to first paint. And we want to push as much of that back to as possible to just render something that shows up and works and works on screen, and then hydrate that as things come along. I think any discussion of suspense is not complete without talking about Andrew Clark's demos of streaming server-side rendering. That's something that Sebastian has directly pointed out as, hey, we need that on Facebook.com as well. These are also, like, there are valid criticisms of web performance and React, right? Like, this is a big part of, some web performance critics of what React does. I think they're exploring all these innovative solutions because, like, we all want the same thing. And I think we want the we want to keep the authoring experience and the ecosystem that we have built up around all of this, and then deliver better solutions than the platform naturally gives us. And so streaming service side rendering isn't something that is publicly talked about, probably won't be released anytime soon, but is a big motivation for the API design as well. So you start to see like why you want all these things in inside the React tree, so that the server-side renderer can actually decide for you.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's fun. I mean, if you go spelunking at all in the React code base, you definitely see stubs for these types of tests where it's like, hey, how are we going to handle suspense, resolution on streaming server-side rendering, and I definitely recommend following along with that. But I also hope to see like a lot of innovation on that, and I think it'll be interesting to see how the rewrite of Facebook.com plays into that. Do you think that's going to have a good showing at this year's conference?
Yeah. So this Ashley and I forget who the other person is. Ashley and Frank from Facebook actually gave this talk at F8. And that was the more interesting part is Relay, because they show capability. Like Relay is kind of like the uncool kid on the GraphQL block, because Apollo is like all about the marketing and has hired really awesome people, but Relay does really innovative things, and for a long time they seemed like they're going the way of Flow. Not to dunk on Flow, but Flow solved different problems, but Relay showed actually really innovative use cases that Apollo just doesn't have. I think that will be updated, refreshed, and directed towards a more specialized audience, because F8 is a more generalized, like, general developer audience. Whereas here they can just go hog on like React and Relay. It's definitely going to show through in terms of like the stuff that they have used in production. And I think they're at like 120,000 React components in Facebook right now.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I've been tracking. I used to have this Twitter thread of like, oh, it's 30,000, it's 40,000, it's 50,000. Eventually, everything in the world will be React components, and then Skynet.
It's like a universal paperclip. Yeah. You ever play that game?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not too familiar with Relay, but do you feel like there's going to be more like first class tie-ins between like Relay and React that would make it a more attractive solution for someone who has a React code base that with a GraphQL backend?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I don't like the word first class when it comes to Relay. I think that React has and always will have a far wider audience and reach and applicability than Relay.
Sure.
So Relay will always be designed around React. The only advantage that Relay has is that they sit next to each other. So, and they have the same manager.
Sorry, I might have said that backwards. I mean, like, do you think Relay is going to have some like first class affordances for React, given how closely tied they are together? Where Apollo is kind of more like generalized across like frameworks. Do you suspect that maybe Relay might get closer to React?
I mean, obviously, to the extent that they work together, they have a very natural information flow, but React actually makes a lot of effort to work with Apollo. And I think they're working with Urkel as well anyone that is building a significant GraphQL layer. So I wouldn't worry too much. Ben Newman, who is on the Apollo team, I think used to be on the React team or somewhere in that org. I think they're very familiar with each other, and I think it's in React's incentive to not play favorites when it comes to key information. Obviously there's always like informal information spreading when you sit next to each other and you share the same manager. There is something new that happened over the past year that React's got a new team manager, and I've never met Yuju, but we'll see her on stage for the first time at ReactConf.
Awesome! It'll be cool to meet her. So there's one component that we haven't talked about, which was new to me, kind of spelunking through the source, which was Suspense List.
Yep.
And I don't think we've talked about it yet, but My understanding is that this component is a way of coordinating kind of child suspense components, ones that might resolve at very different times. And you had mentioned it pretty early on, but it has like a prop API called a reveal order, and you can reveal things together, forwards, so effectively top to bottom or left to right, or backwards, which would be the reverse, like right to left or bottom to top.
That's exactly everything I know as well.
Okay.
but you have linked some demos, which basically when you refresh it, you see exactly what you're talking about. When you see think about a feed of different events, and maybe they all load at different times, but you can fire off their requests, and regardless of what order in which the async requests resolve, they at least appear in some controllable order. And again, because you're just like declaring all these in as children of a suspense component, you don't necessarily have fine-grained control, except for this one declarative thing that says together, forwards, and backwards.
Yeah, yeah. And this is something that you can play with today. It's in 16.10 under a unstable flag. So it's unstable, was it suspense list? And I'm probably going to butcher the name, but Eddie Kuro has some really cool examples, which I wanted to bring this component up so that we could link them and you could see how these things work together, because they're like, you know, it's actually really cool to see these different options, like options that we would have had to like kind of like create by hand before.
Manually code. Yeah. I don't know in terms of like UX design, I don't know when a backwards reveal might make sense. Not really, like maybe a chat, right? Like, I guess maybe when you're rendering a chat and you don't really care about scrolling up the chat history, you just want to render right to the bottom. Like that's the most important thing. You want to get that on the screen as fast as you can.
That seems like the perfect example. I mean, I've been struggling to find one as well, but that seems like exactly what you
want. I just answered my own question. I mean, you know, so Facebook does own WhatsApp, so I guess they might have these for. There's another API I think you didn't cover in these demos, the tail prop. So suspense list has a reveal order prop, and then there's also a tail prop. And you can see from the test that there's like a hidden flag and a collapse flag. It just controls what you do with the tail. I haven't actually tried it. I haven't seen a demo of it, but it seems pretty intuitive that it just controls what the tail does.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
And then there's some weird edge cases when you nest a suspense list inside of a suspense list, because that's what you have to do when you write a library, when you are a maintainer of a library like that. I definitely recommend checking out that PR for the thinking behind the tail API, because there's some nasty nuances when you mix a non-suspense component with suspense, and then you nest the suspense list.
Yeah, those tests are very interesting. Definitely a fascinating read, the test for suspense list. Let's see. So I think we covered all of the things. Oh, sorry. With regard to suspense list, if you don't use suspense list, you can still render all your suspense components. And the default is basically just whatever's ready first renders, right?
Siblings render together. And then, right up to the suspense boundary, siblings will render together. But this.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, like suspense boundary controls everything inside of that suspense boundary. Suspense list controls suspense boundaries.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
That's all.
It's still all pretty new to me.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. What are you most excited about this next week? Are you going to be there at ReactConf, or are you going to be watching on the live stream?
I'm not there. First of all, because I didn't get a ticket, and they didn't give me a ticket. But I didn't even apply to speak, because I'm already speaking at React Advanced. That's in London at a different conference.
Cool.
I had probably the best talk I've ever done at JSConf Asia is this talk about writing hooks from scratch. And so that was a general JS audience, and I had to like introduce React a little bit and what hooks are and all that. Mm-hmm. So at a React Advanced conference, I can do away with all that. And so just go straight into cloning React, and then talking a little bit about React Fiber. I think
awesome.
A lot of people, like the whole question is about like, what do we use React for? And a lot of people will talk about JSX, will talk about the superficial things that you can actually clone in like 30 lines of code. And really what we're using, and I used to say, this was the theme of my React Valley talk last year. I used to say that you use React because of the scheduler. And it turns out that they open source and stripped out the scheduler right away. So I'm like, what do we use React for? And it's really like the reconciler, the event system, like the stuff that is like very gnarly and no one thinks about. So I think when you choose to use React, you should figure out like why you use it, because this like, you know, that really gets you to answer core questions like, why does Preact have the same API as Preact and is a tenth of the size? What's the trade-off there? I think the more you sort of dig into that, the more you have a deeper appreciation of what React really is and why you use it.
Now, before we go, I'm going to ask you, do you think, I know that there's been like a lot of work happening with like, I think it's under the React Fire, kind of like reworking React DOM, kind of making event components versus like, you know, on click, and there's a bunch of work kind of happening under the scenes. Do you think that we'll see anything like that at React Conf, or do you think those things are going to remain under the hood, kind of in like R&D phase for a little bit longer?
Yeah, I think all those things will be R&D.
Cool.
It's definitely doesn't seem anywhere as ready. So, for example, one of the reasons I know that use deferred value and use transition will be talked about as part of the success launch is because I started talking about them together with another hook called use event, mm-hmm. Which is added as part of the React Flare experiment. And the React core team came in and only denied the use event hook. They only marked out the use event hook as like, no, we won't be releasing that. So therefore, by process of elimination, the other two must be pretty final. I honestly think that it seems like JSX is due for a refresh. That's what the React Fire projects, I guess, is about. There's some superficial things like deprecating class name just using class.
Sure.
Which shows how much like probably wasn't that strong of an argument that like the whole reason we weren't using classes because it's a reserved keyword in JavaScript, but it didn't seem that strong anymore as an argument. there's a bunch of sort of ergonomic and actual performance gains to be done out of this rewrite. And it seems like it's low hanging fruit after the reconciler rewrite. So it seems like they're pursuing this. It doesn't seem like it's anytime soon. I'm actually more keen on this other thesis that I'm pursuing, which is so there's Fire and Flare and like I don't know what other F code name keywords. but there's a lot more tie-in with React Native than before. Right, like you saw fast refresh,
yes.
And Dan Abramov has been spending the past two, three months working on React Native, and I'm like, what are you doing? Okay, go back to your day job, and it's not true. I mean, that's where they need the help, but it's obviously going to come for React Web as well, and so it seems like there's this convergence of React Native and React in small ways. So for example, they hired Nicholas Gallagher, who created React Native Web, onto the React Core team. I think that's a big sign that there's something going on where they start caring a lot more. Rick Hanlon from the React Native team gave a talk on the untouchable web at React Finland. So the React Native people are coming over the web. The web people are being hired from the React Native side of things. There seems like there's a lot of convergence. The extremely strong view of this is that in 2 to 3 years, React DOM will look a lot more like React Native Web, even if it's not a direct port. I don't think that this is a I think this is a very controversial thesis because that means you're stepping away from an HTML analogy, right? Like when you write JSX, mm-hmm. it looks like HTML and it looks more semantic. And when you start using things like view text from React Native, that's no longer HTML. That's just like this arbitrary XML tree that you're writing. So I expect that to be a very, very long involved evolution of discussion as you know, for React to achieve its sort of overall vision as a universal UI language that can be learned once and written everywhere. I think that's something that they have to sort of unify. I've gone on for a while. I'm curious to hear what you think, but I just want people to go check out Rikanen's talk on the Untouchable Web, because it really hints at what mobile web is more dominant than desktop web, right? So like people experience mobile web more than they experience desktop web, and we gotta pay attention to the user experience over there. And he talks about the holes that they experience and why they might want better APIs for the mobile web.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that you brought that up, because I totally agree. I think that it seems like early on there was this, hey, this was like 5-6 years ago that they announced like React Native, and it kind of felt like this thing that would be, I guess, developed in tandem or in pair with like React. And it's taken a long time to actually get that to be true, right? Like they were very much separate projects for a very long time. And it feels like not only, you know, are they like, you know, kind of properly dependent on each other, but there's a lot of like cross-pollination of ideas and kind of thinking together. And like people, like you said, who are working, who have been like, you know, into React Native as a platform, like Nicholas Gallagher, and his ideas of kind of abstracting the web platform using the React Native primitives. All that stuff really seems to be like, there's communication happening there, and it's going to be really exciting to see maybe like, you know, a few years down the road, like this actual, you know, I think that that what was the idea? Like learn once, write anywhere. Is that kind of, and that derived from
Java,
from from Java, well, from the prevailing idea before that, which was that you could like kind of write something and run anywhere, right? Like they had this like response to like, you know, write once, run anywhere, which didn't really like actually seem to work at the time, but it seems like we might be coming back to a place where we, you know, get the proper primitives that like React Native actually informs React in such a way that we are writing in a way that is platform agnostic by default. And I mean, that's
I have a hot take on this.
that's far down the road, but you know,
the team won't agree with this. But we were sold on learn once, write anywhere, uh-huh. And what we actually are ending up with is write once, run anywhere. It's like this. Yeah. I had this like Trojan horse meme where it's like here's the Trojan horse. It's run once, write anywhere, and then what you actually get is write once, run anywhere. And the
you just
tell,
had to wait for
I'll
it.
I'll tell you the tell. It's when people boast about code reuse, because what is code reuse other than write once, run anywhere? And so we have people in the React Reddit all the time talking about like, yeah, when I use React Native Web, I have 90% plus code reuse.
Yeah.
What is that apart from write once, run anywhere? So like whatever it is, like it definitely is the right solution, especially for teams that can't, like the whole thing about Airbnb stepping away from React Native is because they have the resources to hire entire teams of iOS and Android engineers. And of course you can move better and faster with those teams, but that you're not Airbnb most like, so, so absolutely use the same code base for Android and React Native and Android and iOS and web. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I call this, I actually wrote a blog post about this. I call this the singularity, where at some point React Native for web might be a better way to write things than React DOM. Mm-hmm. And it may not be Nicholas Gallagher's version. It may be a completely reinvented version, but
sure.
He's at a very good spot to write it. And I think one of the big wins, and this is, I mean, you work closely with Michael Jackson, and I got this idea from Michael Jackson, where the idea is that you can build in better accessibility primitives, especially because React can analyze your tree structure and assign, for example, like sequential headings.
Interesting.
And bake in things like, all right, you know, href target no open no refer, you know, that kind of like security basics. I'm blanking on what else, but there is work done by Dominic from the React core team on focus scopes as well, where we can trap focuses, especially within modals and stuff like that. These are all things that you know, are done in user land, but don't really have a good API around it, and therefore it's hard to do, and people always get it wrong. So I think that it's a key motivation that when you have control, more control over what you write, and the library to interpret that as the React language, you can actually get better defaults through interpreting this. So that's
nice. Well, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for that eventual world, and I agree with you. I'm convinced. I've seen was it React Native for Web? I think that really just kind of, you know, blew my mind as to like what was possible, you know, if, you know, in the future. And I think that, you know, just like all of Nicholas's stuff, he's just kind of like ahead of his time. And I feel like, you know, if we could get to a place like that, it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Really awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, we've been over an hour, so I don't want to take up any of your time. It's just so much fun to talk with you about this stuff. Do you have anything else that you want to address before we leave?
I think so I've been playing around with Svelte a bit. I think there's some talk of like compilers are the new frameworks, and this is a thesis actually from mm-hmm. Tom Dale, who's big in the Ember community. I think there is a lot more focus on like pushing things to build times. That's why Gatsby is helping to optimize a bunch of things. Next.js has a bunch of optimizations that are being introduced by the Chrome team. And so there was a little bit of excitement around prepack, which I think Dominic was also working on, around optimizing React. It doesn't seem like that's something that's a high priority. Like this is even longer term than everything else that we've discussed, but, there is some focus on React's, compiling React, and what we can get out of that. So I don't know. I think I'm also optimistic towards people talking about that as well, because I think that's one area that React is not focusing on, and frameworks like Angular, Svelte, and Ember are all doing it.
Yeah, yeah. We actually did an episode a long time ago, like 18, where we talked with Nikolai Tillman about prepack,
yes,
and kind of what it could, you know, what it could mean for React. But again, I mean, it was like, you know, I suspect that it's probably still in the phase that it was, which is just very much research. Like they have a couple cool, like, you know, proofs of concept, but in terms of, you know, how that would actually apply to something as complex as like a React application, just kind of like not quite proven yet.
That's all I got.
But now just for thoroughness, you mentioned Svelte, but Ember also has, what's Ember's kind of compiled
Glimmer.
Glimmer, that's right. So we have Svelte and Glimmer.
Angular IV as well.
Angular IV.
You should just interview all these people. I'm sure.
I know.
You know what would be amazing is to have Angular and Ember people on the React podcast, and like what's going on there, and like what do they think that we don't talk about, you know?
I want it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I want it. I'm here for it. Yeah, so I think that's it. I think we should probably just say once again, you know, like this is just us hanging out, talking about stuff that we think is cool and like want to see. We don't speak for anybody but our two nerdy selves just hanging out on this call.
There go those crazy React Asians again, yammering off.
Just, yeah. Yeah, so that's all this is. We're just, you know, two dudes reading pull requests and tests.
You gotta get a better hobby.
Awesome. Well, hey, Swix, thanks so much for being here with me. I enjoy these chats every time we have them.
Thanks, Michael. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Before you go today, I want to give you 15% off of React Day Berlin. This conference is always a hit, and they have a terrific speaker roster this year. Go to reactday.berlin, another fun domain, and use the promo SPECFM. Or just find this episode's show notes at reactpodcast.com/69. Nice. And click our link, which will automatically apply that discount code for you. Thanks to our great sponsors, G2i and Infinite Red. G2i is a hiring platform for remote developers devoted exclusively to React and React Native. Check out G2i at g2i.co and get matched with React and React Native roles that are fully remote at companies who are serious about quality engineering. G2i, we vet, you get hired. It's that simple. Bring your ideas to life with React Native. Hire the industry experts at Infinite Red. Visit reactpodcast.infinite.red and get 2 tickets to next year's Chain React Conf when you start a new project. Meet the team and see why they are the ones to take your React Native app the distance.
This episode of React Podcast was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson. You can find React Podcast on Spec, a network to help designers and developers level up. Visit spec.fm to find other shows that will take you further in your career. Help us out by reviewing this show on iTunes. Your reviews help the show grow and help us ensure great guests and awesome content week to week. To join the discussion, visit reactpodcast.com/chat or follow us on Twitter at React Podcast. I'm at Chantastic. To stay out of the discussion but get updates, visit reactpodcast.com/news and sign up for emails. Thanks so much for giving us your attention. We'll be in your ears again next week.